This is Site 2. Coming up. New Queen Street Station must serve all of its passengers.
Chris Dearen. Shame on all who let Corbyn destroy the Labour Party we knew.
How Paisley is building on the legacy of the 2021 bid.
Government plans a deposit return scheme to cut plastic bottle waste in England.
Police Scotland on alert over racist online craze dubbed Punish a Muslim.
Police patrols increased because of anti-Muslim hate campaign.
Deadline looms for Facebook boss to respond to MP's leaked data evidence request. This article is unattributed.
Inverness Caledonian Thistle 1, Dundee United 0. Laszlo questions desires of players to turn it around.
Sport. A roundup.
England 1, Italy 1. Southgate's side pay the penalty as VAR verdict denies hosts victory. The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday, the 28th of March 2018. Opinion section. New Queen Street Station must serve all of its passengers. This article from the Herald View. The plans look promising. A sleek new building with an all-glass front and a swooping copper ceiling. An expanded concourse with more space for passengers. Space also for longer trains, which means less chance of overcrowding. All in all, the redevelopment of Queen Street Station in Glasgow should mean a much improved modern facility for the city, and one that, in the words of the Scottish Government, better serves the needs of passengers. But will it really? In the old Queen Street Station, as well as self-service ticket machines, passengers could use the ticket office and buy their tickets from staff. But there are now concerns that the redeveloped station may not include a ticket office at all. For many passengers, even those who regularly buy their tickets by machine, that will come as a bit of a shock. The alarm bells started ringing when staff noticed a reference in a railway magazine to the new redeveloped Queen Street Station not having a ticket office. The RMT union is now seeking clarification on the issue and has said it will not accept ticket office closure in any way, shape or form. The response of ScotRail is that it is still considering the matter. The way customers buy their tickets is changing, it says, with more and more buying tickets online or using self-service ticket machines. And that means the company has to change the way it does things. The direction of travel would seem clear. But if, as feared, ScotRail does have plans to ditch the ticket office at Queen Street completely, it should think again. Obviously, what it says about changing customer habits has a firm basis in reality. High Street banks have experienced exactly the same trends with the growth of online banking, which has led to a dramatic reduction in the number of branches across the country. High Street stores have also had to adapt to the move online. Adapt or die. But even though banks, supermarkets and railway companies have to adapt to the changing world, that doesn't mean that they can ignore their responsibilities to provide a service to all their customers, those who use the internet and those who do not. It's true that many love the convenience of online, but not everyone is in that situation. Hard as it may be for some to believe, there are some people who are not online or comfortable using automated technology. They deserve a service too. In particular, ScotRail should consider its responsibilities to elderly passengers, some of whom may not be comfortable using ticket machines, or simply prefer dealing with a person rather than a touchscreen. And what about the tourists who use Queen Street Station as a jumping-off point to other parts of Scotland? Is a computer screen really the best welcome that they can expect? There also has to be a concern about the effect getting rid of the ticket office might have on the value for money customers can expect. Often it's a member of staff in the office who alerts a customer to a cheaper or better way to buy tickets. The chances are that, if a computer replaces the staff in the ticket office, many more passengers may end up paying more than they should for their tickets. The question for ScotRail as it makes decisions about what the new Queen Street Station will look like is how to balance responding to the inevitable and unavoidable changes in the way that many customers behave with its duty to provide a service that works for all its passengers. The new station will undoubtedly look good, and a lot of money, some £100 million, is being spent achieving it. However, a modern station should be judged not on how it looks, but on whether it works well for the passengers who pass through its doors. We will have to wait to see whether Queen Street can pass that test. This article from the Herald View.
Chris Dearen. Shame on all who let Corbyn destroy the Labour Party we knew. An article published in the Herald Scotland of Tuesday, the 27th of March 2018. In 2016, I joined the Labour Party. It was a decision I wrestled with. Although naturally sympathetic towards Labour in its centrist form, I've always believed journalists shouldn't be joiners. Independence of thought and practice, what Graham Greene called the splinter of ice in the heart, is the writer's most precious possession. There are times you need to wield the blade, and that's easier to do if you're free. That June, Jeremy Corbyn found himself facing a leadership challenge less than a year after being elected to the post. His short reign had been marked by one calamity after another. He had failed to use the weight of his office to campaign for a Remain vote in the Brexit referendum. As a hopeless Tory government flailed around in the wake of the referendum's surprise outcome, he showed no capability of or interest in holding it to account. He clearly wasn't up to it. Labour's MPs passed a motion of no confidence in him by 172 votes to 40. Britain needs, not just an effective and mainstream Labour Party, but an effective and mainstream official opposition. It has never needed it more. It was this, more than the silly juvenilia that makes up the hard left's political credo, that convinced me to break my iron rule. It felt less like a choice than a patriotic duty. Corbyn and his useless coterie of privately educated Marxists had to go. It didn't work out, obviously. The cult was too strong. As with Donald Trump, there were too many fanboys caught up in self-important quasi-religious rapture, and he was disastrously re-elected that September. I cancelled my direct debit immediately. But here's the thing. However briefly it lasted, I liked being a part of Labour. I've kept my membership card and have it in front of me now, number L1484592. When that small red rectangle arrived in the post, I understood the seductive pull of belonging to a noble cause, to carry in your wallet something that connects you directly to Hardy, Attlee, Bevan, Gaitskell, Healy and Blair is no small thing. To be one digit among many that in their totality form one of history's great social movements provides a real charge to your sense of yourself. Solidarity is a cool feeling. And so I think I understand at least a little why today so many good people find themselves unable to walk away from Labour. Those moderates who have devoted their adult lives to the cause still cannot come to terms with the hard left coup. They think they will in time regain control and just have to wait it out. They can't give up on Labour any more than they could give up on a son or daughter who has gone wildly off the tracks. There is a problem, though. Their Labour no longer exists. The people are being cleared out. The rules are being rewritten. The locks are being changed. This Labour, Corbyn's Labour, John McDonnell's Labour, John Lansman's Labour, Len McCluskey's Labour, Seamus Milne's Labour, for the eight are the masters now, is a grotesque bastardisation of what once was. This Labour is a moral black hole, an apologist for many of the world's worst regime and a defender of anti-Western sentiment. This Labour is firmly in the grip of people who, for good reason, were previously banished to the fringes, and they're not giving it back. This Labour is so toxic, so bereft of decency, that it tries to excuse foreign powers carrying out hit jobs on Britain's streets and caused Britain's Jews to gather outside Westminster last night to protest the anti-Semitism that now runs like an open sewer through the party. An open letter from the Board of Deputies of British Jews and the Jewish Leadership Council declared that enough is enough. Jeremy Corbyn did not invent this form of politics, but he has had a lifetime within it and now personifies its problems and dangers. He issues empty statements about opposing anti-Semitism, but does nothing to understand or address it. We conclude that he cannot seriously contemplate anti-Semitism because he is so ideologically fixed within a far-left worldview that is instinctively hostile to mainstream Jewish communities. It is, remember, just 70 years since the Holocaust, no time at all. How on earth has Labour got itself into this grisly state? How can those good people tolerate being associated with it? The usual suspects have tweeted their horror, of course, the Chukas and Yvettes, the moderate former cabinet ministers and frontbenchers who have seen their careers derailed by the Corbyn ascendancy. Indeed, they regularly share with us on social media their frustration and disagreement with the party leadership. Many of them turned out in Parliament Square last night. But in the end, their words must count for less than their actions. For them, Corbyn and the worldview he represents are demonstrably not beyond the pale. How can they be if they accept him as their leader? They will campaign at the next general election for a Labour government led by Corbyn and Macdonald in full awareness of what those men believe and the damage they could do. They continue to sit meekly behind this front bench, legitimising it through their presence and timidity. There is something overpoweringly unpleasant in the self-justification and shabby contortions that accompany such choices. Meanwhile, Jews feel they have no choice but to take to the streets. These MPs could have resigned the whip. They could have sat as a separate bloc in the Commons. They could have moved to set up a new party. They could have openly, loudly, consistently and jointly denounced what has been done to their party and refused to lend their name or their presence. They've done none of these things, and it will not be easy to forgive them. As I say, I've kept my Labour Party membership card. In a hotel room last week, I stuck it in the slot that turned the lights on. At least it's still useful for something.
The Herald, Monday, March the 26th. The Agenda column, a column for outside contributors, and today it is from Ian Nicholson, Chair of Paisley Partnership Board. How Paisley is building on the legacy of the 2021 bid. The competition for UK City of Culture 2021 may be over, but Paisley and Renfrewshire is still striving ahead with plans to transform its future using its remarkable cultural heritage and be a top visitor destination in Scotland. Throughout the bid journey, the town and surrounding area, supported by friends around the globe, championed the ambition that Paisley could transform its reputation, grow its creative economy, and take its place as a centre of cultural excellence. Undeterred, and through the bid legacy, we are pushing ahead with achieving this vision, one that was developed through conversations with more than 34,000 local people. An additional £7 million investment has been committed to deliver events, cultural programming, and grow Renfrewshire's creative economy over the next 4 years. Around 20 new events and projects will be developed, covering new festivals and collaborations with national and international artists and national organisations, and a cultural programme delivered with, by and in local communities across the region. The activity is underpinned by a £100 million capital investment in Paisley Museum, cultural venues and outdoor spaces, and will help to drive the economic, social and cultural step changes that were the foundation of the bid, growing a new dimension to the local economy, being recognised for cultural excellence, transforming the town's image, lifting communities out of poverty, and making the town centres vibrant cultural hubs. We believe this shows that here in Renfrewshire, we are committed to supporting the creative sector by prioritising arts development and building cultural capacity at a time when the potential of culture and creativity to make a difference elsewhere is under pressure. Our investment in growing our cultural and creative sector includes £500,000 to top up our existing Culture, Heritage and Events Fund and the new Organisational Development Fund, which will grow and provide stability for independence over the next 3 years. And we will expand and grow the network of local groups and organisations delivering events of scale in Renfrewshire, resulting in new, authentic and original programme content. Major strides have already been made to continue to keep Paisley and Renfrewshire on the map as a visitor destination, with the launch of a dedicated destination brand, paisley.is, with everything you need to know about visiting and making Paisley and Renfrewshire home. Having a distinctive identity through paisley.is will continue to elevate the profile of the area, drive marketing activity, and support all Renfrewshire attraction and accommodation providers to attract more people to visit. We know that events drive visitors. Through the legacy funding and the brand, we will continue to deliver great events and build on our track record of bidding for and winning events such as the British Pipe Band Championships, the Scottish Album of the Year Awards and the Royal National Mod, and will deliver an additional £5.5 million to the economy by 2022. Our visitor plan will drive these ambitions further and support tourism business growth in the area, growing employment in tourism-related industries to 7,150 and increasing visitor spend in Renfrewshire by £31 million. This all shows we are still listening to the 34,000 voices that shaped Paisley's bid and how the ambition, passion and commitment to make Paisley and Renfrewshire a cultural and creative hub is very much alive and well, says Ian Nicholson, who is the chair of Paisley Partnership Board.
This article from the Herald Scotland Politics on the 28th of March 2018. Government plans deposit return scheme to cut plastic bottle waste in England. This article was unattributed. Consumers could face paying a deposit on drink bottles and cans, which is repaid when they hand them in for recycling under government plans to tackle plastic waste. Environment Secretary Michael Gove confirmed ministers would introduce a deposit return scheme for single-use drinks, containers such as plastic and glass bottles and aluminium cans in England, subject to consultation. The move aims to boost recycling rates and cut litter, and comes amid increasing concern over the issue of single-use plastic waste, much of which ends up as rubbish polluting the countryside and oceans. UK consumers use an estimated 13 billion plastic drink bottles a year, but more than 3 billion are incinerated, sent to landfill or end up as litter in towns and countryside and the seas, officials said. Some countries already have deposit return schemes which charge an upfront deposit on drinks containers ranging from 8 pence in Sweden to 22 pence in Germany that is redeemed when the empty bottle or can is returned. The consultation will look at how such a scheme could work in England, alongside other measures to increase recycling rates, which have stalled in recent years. Options for a scheme could include providing cash awards for returning bottles and cans without an upfront deposit through reverse vending machines, where consumers insert the container and get coins in return. Mr. Gove said, "We can be in no doubt that plastic is wreaking havoc in our marine environment, killing dolphins, choking turtles, and degrading our most precious habitats. It is absolutely vital we act now to tackle this threat and curb the millions of plastic bottles a day that get unrecycled. We have already banned harmful microbeads and cut plastic bag use, and now we want to take action on plastic bottles to help clean up our oceans." The government said it would only take forward options from the consultation, which demonstrates they offer clear benefits, are resistant to fraud, and where the costs of business, consumers and taxpayers are proportionate. The official said they wanted to talk to the devolved administrations about the scope for working together on the issue. A poll for waste recycling company SUS found that 74% of people would be likely to return their plastic drink bottles or cans if they had to pay a 10 pence deposit, which they could then reclaim when they returned them for recycling. SUS has called for a deposit return scheme which only targets plastic bottles and aluminium cans that are smaller than 700 ml, such as soft drink cans and bottles of water, but to be drunk on the go. Responding to the announcement by Mr. Gove, the campaign to protect rural England's CPRE Litter Programme Director Samantha Harding described it as a brilliant and significant decision. "I am thrilled that we finally see the many benefits deposit schemes will bring to England, not least the absence of ugly drink containers in our beautiful countryside." And author Bill Bryston, a former president of CPRE, said future generations will look back on this decision as a piece of supremely enlightened policy making, and one that raises the prospect of the world's most beautiful country becoming free from drinks container litter at last. Elena Polisano, Oceans Campaigner at Greenspace UK, said it was positive the government's proposals included plastic and glass bottles and metal. "If the system is UK-wide, applicable to drinks containers in all sizes and available everywhere they are sold, it will make a huge difference to the plastic problem. The government must also be careful to avoid a voluntary scheme that only applies to some retailers. Both the public and business are in favour of a strong deposit return scheme, which is a tried and tested way to increase recycling rates," she said. This article was unattributed.
Article from Herald Scotland, 27th of March 2018. Politics. Police Scotland on alert over racist online craze dubbed "Punish a Muslim." Alistair Grant, political correspondent. Police have moved to reassure Muslim communities amid growing fears over a vile online game which awards points to those who attack people in hijabs or burn down mosques. The disturbing craze, dubbed "Punish a Muslim," is already being probed by counter-terrorism forces down south after letters were sent to five MPs. The letters, which have been shared widely on social media, urge people to verbally abuse Muslims, pull their headscarves off, beat them up, torture them, throw acid in their face, and even butcher them. The more extreme the action, the more points are awarded, with "burn or bomb a mosque" near the top of the list. Muslim leaders said the flyers had struck fear into communities, while Police Scotland said it was monitoring the situation. Dr. Mohammed Idris, convener of the Muslim Council of Scotland, said the letters were a chilling reminder of the very real danger and hatred facing ordinary Muslims every day. He added, "Although there are no known recipients in Scotland, they have nonetheless caused considerable alarm and the community needs reassurance, especially since the letters have already triggered Islamophobic incidents here. Our advice to members of the public is to remain vigilant and alert, but not alarmed. Go about your daily business, taking some extra precautions. If you feel threatened or are at risk, contact the police immediately. The issue will be discussed at the Scottish Parliament today as part of a new cross-party group aimed at tackling racism and Islamophobia. It comes after reports of a number of racist or Islamophobic hate crimes in Glasgow over the last 10 days, including two allegations of physical assault. One young girl has alleged that a schoolboy asked if he could pull her hijab off and film it so he could earn points. Scottish Labour MP Anas Sarwar, who chairs the new group, called the flyers abhorrent. He He added, "It is a sick social media craze that has absolutely no place in our society." Faisal Choudhury, chairman of the Edinburgh and Lothian's Regional Equality Council, said a number of Muslims had expressed concerns. He said some taxi drivers were considering not turning up for work on the day mentioned in the letters when the game will take place. He said, "This is an appalling and outrageous attack on individuals' human rights and freedoms. The clear intent of the letters is to incite violence and divide communities, which will not work." Police Scotland Superintendent David Pettigrew said, "Police Scotland is aware of the recent media coverage of letters received by some individuals in England over the past few weeks that are anti-Islamic in nature. While there are no known recipients in Scotland to date, Police Scotland recognise that there is the potential for a rise in fears among some community members and also for some incidents of hate to be perceived to have been caused by the publicity around the letters. Police Scotland officers are liaising with relevant forces and continues to monitor the situation. Regular reviews are being conducted and any action taken will be proportionate and measured while being careful not to inadvertently raise any additional fears or concerns."
The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 28th of March 2018. Politics section. Police patrols increased because of anti-Muslim hate campaign. This article by Scottish political editor Tom Gordon. Police Scotland are to step up patrols around mosques and other religious buildings to reassure communities amidst an anti-Muslim hate campaign. Deputy Chief Constable Johnny Gwynn said call handlers had also been briefed to escalate calls appropriately and intelligence assets were looking for signals in coming days. The extra steps are being taken ahead of April the 3rd, which has been dubbed Punish a Muslim Day on social media and in letters sent to several MPs in England earlier this month. The campaign suggests people earn points on a sliding scale by attacking Muslims. In the single known Scottish case related to the campaign, a 14-year-old boy last week asked a pupil outside a Glasgow school if he could rip off her hijab so it could be filmed to earn 25 points. The letters are now being investigated by counter-terrorism officers in northeast England. No letters have appeared so far in Scotland, but the campaign has caused anxiety among Muslim communities. At Holyrood last night, the first meeting of a cross-party group on tackling Islamophobia heard reports of children being scared, of adults considering staying off work, and even one couple considering cancelling their wedding on April the 3rd. Many speakers sought reassurances from the police, but also said they felt reluctant to give the hate campaign more publicity in case it spread alarm. Senior police officers stressed that there was no intelligence of any direct threat to anyone in Scotland, and that the matter was a risk rather than a threat. Their advice was for people to be vigilant and go about their daily business without being scared, but also to contact the police immediately if anything did happen. DCC Gwynn, who's from Northern Ireland, told the meeting, "We're taking this seriously. I was brought up in a place where people were killing each other and hating each other because they were a Protestant or a Catholic. I understand this. I've lived through a similar thing. I get the fear behind it, hence we're taking it seriously." He added, "Our job is to stop that cancer in life, which is hatred. Our job is to deal with it and stand between you and that harm, not just next week, but any week of this year." Chief Inspector Shaheen Baber said control rooms were already running a unique exercise in relation to the hate campaign, and relevant calls would be tagged as a priority for a faster response. He said, "On the day there will be extra patrols to make sure that our community centres, including other minorities, get extra attention." Glasgow Labour MSP Anas Sarwar, chair of the cross-party group, said, "We recognise the fear and alarm the Punish a Muslim campaign is causing, which has no place in society. An attack on one person living in Scotland, regardless of faith, is an attack on us all. Our advice to people concerned by this campaign is to go about your daily life, but to remain vigilant. And we urge everyone to look out for their friends, family and neighbours. Any suspicious or concerning activity should be reported to the police. And we have received assurances from Police Scotland that there will be extra vigilance around faith buildings and where there are large gatherings. Scotland must be united as one community of equals, and we have a duty to look out for one another. Only by working together can we tackle Islamophobia and all forms of racism and prejudice." This article was by Scottish political editor Tom Gordon.
This article from the Herald on Monday the 26th of March 2018. Politics. Deadline looms for Facebook boss to respond to MP's leaked data evidence request. This article is unattributed. Facebook Chief Executive Mark Zuckerberg has been told by MPs to respond by the end of Monday to a request to appear before. He had yet to reply on Sunday evening, the Departure for Culture, Media and Sport DCMS said. The billionaire founder of the social media giant has been summoned to give evidence about Facebook's links to the political analysis consultancy Cambridge Analytica. Damian Collins, chairman of the DCMS committee, accused Facebook of previously misleading the committee by understating risks posed by firms who harvest vast swathes of personal data from millions of users of the social network. In a letter to Mr. Zuckerberg on March the 20th, Mr. Collins said, "It is now time to hear from a senior Facebook executive with the sufficient authority to give an accurate account of this catastrophic failure of process. The committee has repeatedly asked Facebook about how companies acquire and hold on to user data from their site, and in particular about whether data has been taken without their consent. Given your commitment at the start of the new year to fixing Facebook, I hope that this representative will be you." Mr. Zuckerberg took out adverts in many British and US Sunday papers, apologising for a breach of trust regarding the exploitation of leaked data in 2014. They read, "We have a responsibility to protect your information. If we can't, we don't deserve it." Shares in Facebook have plunged in recent days over its handling of the scandal, with tens of billions wiped off its valuation. Cambridge Analytica denies wrongdoing. This article is unattributed.
The Herald Scotland. On Wednesday the 28th of March 2018. Sports section. Inverness Caledonian Thistle 1, Dundee United 0. Laszlo questions desires of players to turn it around. This article by Alistair Fraser. Aaron Duran's vital winner last night deepened Dundee United's gloom and anxiety and set cup-winning Inverness Caledonian Thistle's sights on a late-season surge back into promotion contention after their 1-0 triumph. Victory lifted John Robertson's side above Falkirk on goal difference and cut the gap on the Tangerines to 11 points with a game in hand. More significantly, it sliced the gap on playoff contenders Morton to 12 points, with three games in hand for the Highlanders offering a route back into the hunt. United, with just one win in the last eight outings, sank deeper into damaging form. After 7 minutes, Scott Fraser's pass deflected kindly into Scott McDonald's path, but the Aussie striker shot straight at keeper Mark Ridgers. Chances were sparse and creativity thin on the ground, but a massive Col Donaldson free kick from deep created a home opportunity after 17 minutes. Nathan Austin's pace took him away from the United defence, but the connection on his header was weak and easily gathered by Harry Lewis. An incredible Cali Thistle miss followed after 22 minutes. Another terrific turn of pace from ex-Falkirk attacker Austin set him free to the right of the United box, and his chipped attempt beat keeper Lewis and may have been going in. Cali Thistle striker George Oakley met it with his head 2 yards out and somehow skied to the finish over the bar. Just as the first half seemed to be petering out, the hosts found the breakthrough a minute before the break. Oakley peeled free of his marker to the right and slipped a clever wee disguised pass into the path of Aaron Duran to fire in low off the keeper's body. United boss Laszlo brought on Matthew Smith for the ineffective Thomas Mickelson at the break, but the hosts were soon back on the front foot. Liam Polworth's pass had Austin tearing through on the right, but Edgingale's fine saving challenge threw the Cali Thistle frontman off balance and left the Frenchman writhing and requiring treatment. 16-year-old Daniel Mackay, fresh from a goal in Scotland's victory against England schoolboys and a cup final assist, entered the fray after the hour and almost scored 2 minutes later. Twisting onto his right foot on the left side of the box, Mackay's fierce angled strike drew a fine parry for a corner from keeper Lewis. The hosts might have sealed it 11 minutes from time as they went through 3-on-2 on United, but when Oakley threaded a short pass wide for young Mackay, his strike was shut down superbly by the diving Lewis. Laszlo seemed to question his side's desire to improve their poor form. He said, "We are trying everything to change this run, and the players need to answer that question. We had an opportunity tonight to move forward, but it looked like Inverness wanted to be in the playoffs and were happy just to be playing. We've got Morton coming up, and we have a problem. I want to see more energy, and when we're bringing players in to make them fresh mentally, they have to show it. We can talk all we want, but no one will give us a gift. We have to show the desire and the will to win the game. We can talk about lack of quality or confidence forever, but the only way to get it back is by winning games. And with so many games coming up, we have an opportunity to bring it back. This article was by Alistair Fraser.
The Herald, Monday, March the 26th. Sport, a roundup. First of all, ice hockey. Fife Flyers will be the only Scottish representatives in the Elite League playoffs after Brayhead Clan capitulated at the last hurdle. The top eight ice hockey sides in the division go into the quarterfinals, and with Clan sitting eighth with two games to go, their fate still rested in their own hands, despite some turgid displays this season. However, the wheels came off the Brayhead bus in dramatic fashion on Friday night after a 2-0 lead at home to Nottingham Panthers was squandered on the way to a 6-3 loss in front of 3,400 at the Brayhead Arena. The following night, victory away to Guildford Flames seemed a must, with Coventry Blaze just a point behind with two games to go. But once again, John Tripp's men choked on their way to a 3-1 loss. With Blaze defeating Manchester Storm later on Saturday, it means Brayhead join Dundee Stars and Edinburgh Capitals on the playoff sidelines. Rugby. The BT Premiership Grand Final will be a rerun of last year's League Championship decider when Melrose host Ayr at the Green Yards on April 7 after Watsonians and Curry Chieftains were dispatched from the competition at the semi-final stage on Saturday afternoon. The hosts will start as favourites, have finished top at the end of the regular season. But it was the same scenario last year, and Ayr upset the Applecart in the only game that mattered. They were also the first team to beat Melrose this season when they went to the Green Yards and out-muscled them. Football. David Witherspoon has spoken of his honour at making his debut for Canada. The St Johnstone midfielder capped 16 times for Scotland at under-21 level, made his international bow for the Canucks in their 1-0 win over New Zealand on Saturday. The 28-year-old qualifies for the country thanks to his Winnipeg-born mother, Sheila, and opted to switch allegiance after a conversation with former Scottish youth teammate Scott Arfield, who joined the Canadian ranks in 2016. Witherspoon was introduced by new head coach John Herdman at half-time in the friendly in Murcia at the end of a successful week-long training camp in Spain. Witherspoon said, "What a week. What an honour it is to be involved with the Canada national team, but an even bigger honour in making an appearance in what was a good 1-0 victory for the team." The former Hibernian player turned in a composed display, complete with a few astute through balls in a low-key game, lit up by Toussaint Ricketts' strike in the 54th minute. He was joined in making his full-team debut by Hearts youngster Marcus Godinot, who came on shortly before half-time. Godinot said, "I am delighted to make my debut for Canada. It's been my dream since I was a young boy. It doesn't get better than playing for your country."
The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 28th of March 2018. Sports section. England 1, Italy 1. Southgate's side pay the penalty as VAR verdict denies hosts victory. This article by Steve Naylor. England's World Cup preparations continued in encouraging fashion, despite the frustration of a video assistant referee ruling allowing Italy to snatch a 1-1 draw at Wembley. 4 days after securing a deserved win in Holland, tentative optimism continued as the Three Lions produced a promising display against another big-name absentee from this summer's finals. Italy are not the force they once were, but this was another assured display from England, even though a familiar lack of cutting edge meant Gareth Southgate's side failed to build on Jamie Vardy's first-half goal. Lorenzo Insigne grabbed an 88th-minute penalty leveller after a video assistant referee review. Referee Denise Achikin pointed to the spot after looking at footage of debutant James Tarkowski making contact with Italy substitute Federico Chiesa, but it did not take too much gloss off another solid display in England's last match before Southgate names his squad for Russia. The friendly was the England players' last chance to press home their case for a place on the plane, with the provisional 35-man squad due in with FIFA on May the 14th, and the final 23 group required to be finalised by June the 4th. Southgate will have been largely impressed by his side's performance, although the three-man defence was guilty of the odd hairy moment, and Jack Butland did not look as assured in possession as Jordan Pickford did on his audition for the number one jersey. At the other end, patient play was complemented by intelligent attacking transitions, with sparkling Raheem Sterling's directness causing problems, and leading to the free kick that Jesse Lingard's played quickly, though, for Vardy to fire home. England should have had more, but the lack of cutting edge that's been stark in Harry Kane's absence continued, allowing Insigne to level after the penalty given away by Tarkowski. The Burnley defender looked solid enough on a night when England's three-man defence was nowhere near as coherent as it was in Amsterdam, with John Stones looking particularly cumbersome in the opening exchanges. Ciro Immobile snatched possession away from the dallying Manchester City defender, taking possession on the edge of the England box, only to be denied by a last-ditch recovery challenge. England's desire to play it out from the back didn't wane, but the work still required on that system was highlighted again in the 16th minute, as the unmarked Immobile got between Kyle Walker and Stones, only to send his close-range header off target. Tarkowski sent a looping header over, and Mattia De Sciglio's exceptional challenge stopped Vardy capitalising on a fine Lingard through ball at the other end. England grew into the ascendancy, and Sterling was proving a handful, showing no little skill and desire to get back up after a foul and play through Vardy. The striker's shot was stopped by Gianluigi Donnarumma, just as captain Eric Dier's header was 2 minutes later. Sterling's direct running continued to unsettle Italy, and the home side made that count with some quick thinking in the 26th minute. Referee Achikin signalled for a free kick after the Manchester City man was nipped when racing through, with Lingard reacting smartly and catching the Azzurri on a hop with a pass that Vardy rifled home. Sterling was soon galloping through again, with his smart play out left to the overlapping Ashley Young, seeing a low cross shot deflected just wide. Immobile's deflected strike and the rifled Marco Parolo effort were the best Italy could muster as half-time approached, with Butland fortunate not to give their visitors another chance shortly before the break with a wayward pass. Italy were only fleetingly threatening, though, and Young saw a close-range attempt blocked after more fine work by Sterling, before Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain tried his luck. Substitute Adam Lallana and Sterling had attempts as substitutions took the sting out of the game, with Lewis Cook coming on for his England debut. Insigne looked most likely to peg the hosts back, and fired a volley just wide from an acute angle, with the Napoli attacking midfielder eventually doing the damage from the spot. Chiesa went down in the box under pressure, with his foot stepped on by Tarkowski, and a VAR review led to the penalty being awarded in the Azzurri's favour, despite England's protestations. This article was by Steve Naylor. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Herald Scotland. This weekly talking newspaper digest was a Q&A Review recording service production. The readers were volunteers at Q&A Review, and the producer was Jay Kidd. Q&A Review Recording Service Limited is a registered Scottish charity, number SC018016. Our registered office is at 18 Crowhill Road, Bishop Briggs, Glasgow, G641QY. Remember, you can always get in contact with us by email at information@qandreview.com or by leaving us a message on our answering service at 0141 772 3976. Remember to return your cassette in the wallet provided. Just flip over the address label and post it back to us.